Excellent. Well, good afternoon and welcome. I have to tell you, I've experienced this all day. It's not good when I'm tearing up going into the conversation. That's not a good place for me to start. I'm sure some of you are right there with me. That song's incredible, wasn't it? And how fitting as we continue to move through this conversation called Leaving Loneliness. If you haven't been with us, we've been working through how God powerfully steps into our life and says, not just that loneliness is uncomfortable, not just, hey, you need to figure out how to deal with or work through loneliness, but God steps in and says, no, you need to understand, you were not designed, you were not created to be alone, and it is not good for you to be alone. And how God has actively attacked loneliness in our lives. Last week, we looked at how when Jesus dies alone on that cross for us, it changes everything for us as it pertains to loneliness. It opens the door for us to be able to show up before we've cleaned up. And this is so significant. If you're watching online or if you're here and you weren't here last week and you weren't able to experience that conversation, I want to encourage you, make sure that you go back and do that. Because if you're buying into the lie that you have to clean up before you show up, you're never going to experience what God wants to do in your life as it pertains to loneliness. Because that's also what allows us to be able to experience His presence and the reality that His presence is always with us. I hope this week that you began to experience that as you've been looking, okay, I'm never alone. This reality that I'm never alone. I can constantly experience His presence in my life. And hopefully you've begun to change that inner dialogue, to stop talking to yourself and start talking to Him so that you can not just know that, but you can experience that. And then we saw how, as He gave His life, it opened the door also for us to knowingly be known. Not just for us to be able to connect with Him and know that He's always with us, but for us also to be able to connect with one another. And as we come together today, I want to build on that. Because when Jesus gives His life, not only does He open the door to these things, but He so significantly communicates to us the importance of this. Because when you look at the lengths that He went to eliminate loneliness so that you could be brought into His family, so that you could be adopted into His family, so that you could know that He's always with you. When you look at the lengths that he went to, you realize that this is phenomenally important. And I think it demonstrates to us that we need to value this in a way that for many of us, we never have before. And again, I think many of us have said, well, you know, loneliness probably isn't good. You need to figure out how to be able to make sure that you have some friends and that type of thing. But we haven't seen this in the significance that God presents it. And the fact that Jesus says, I'm willing to sacrifice. Listen to what Philippians 2 says that He sacrificed. It says, though He was God, He did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, He gave up His divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When He appeared in human form, He humbled Himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. Jesus says, no, I'm willing to sacrifice everything that is rightfully mine, everything that I deserve, because He wanted you. God has not been passively attacking loneliness in our story. From the moment that it entered our story, He has been actively attacking it. He said, no, it's worth the sacrifice. And He's willing to give up all of that. He's willing to risk the fact that He was, well, listen to how John says it. It says, He came into the very world He created, but the world did not recognize Him. He came to His own people, and even they rejected Him. He said, no, it's worth risking the rejection. It's worth the sacrifice. It's worth the risk. It's worth the investment. I mean, he gave everything. Hebrews 12 talks about Jesus and says, we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting Him, He endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now He is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. What is the joy that He's looking forward to when He goes to the cross? When He literally invests everything, what is the joy that He's looking forward to? It's the end of the loneliness. Not for him. He lived in constant communion with the Father and with the Spirit. For you. The joy is the family that he's bringing together. This is not a small thing. And Jesus has not only changed our entire experience of it, but when you watch him engage it, it should change the way that we engage it. Not only should it change the way that we think about it, it should change the way that we engage it. And this is very important, because as is the case in everything in our lives, our goal on this journey is to be like him. Our goal is to be able to engage life the way that he engaged life. And so when it comes to community, our goal should be, I want to be able to engage community the way that he engaged it. I want to value it the way that he valued it. I want in my life for it to be as valuable to me as it was to him. And then look at what he gave for it. It's unbelievable. And this is important because in almost every area of life, there's a process that we move through as it pertains to growth, as it pertains to maturity. We talk about this typically in terms of our spiritual growth and development. We talk about how all of us start and we're being fed. In other words, someone's building into and sharing with you, but you don't want to start there. You need to learn how to be able to feed yourself. No one likes to feed a grown person, right? So you need to learn how to be able to feed yourself and engage God yourself. Last week, when we walked through that experience plan, what was that about? It's about you pursuing him and also you learning how to be able to feed yourself. And interacting with God about, okay, God, what's my next step? And where are you taking me? And what does this journey look like with you? But that's not the end either, because you don't just want to begin to feed yourself. But if you're going to become like Jesus, well, what are you developing? You're developing your ability to be able to build into and to feed others. This is the process of maturity. And so I begin being fed, but then I learn how to be able to feed myself. Now I'm feeding others, building into sharing the message with those around me, helping others take the steps. And the same thing is true when it comes to community. If we're going to become like Jesus, all of us, our journey begins with consuming community. As a matter of fact, for many of you, as you walk in here, that's what you're doing. On a weekly basis, you're here and you enjoy the community. And all of us start there. You're not necessarily contributing to the community. You're not serving as part of a team, but you're enjoying the community. Sometimes it's interesting because people will come up to me and say, you know, I really like your groups. I just don't like your church. I'm like, you realize you're just saying you don't like me, right? I mean, basically that's what you're saying to me. Or they'll say, you know, I love going to your connection events. I just don't like attending your church. And I'm like, okay, fine. But here's the thing. I understand that there's always those who are just going to consume community, and all of us start there. But here's the thing. You can't stay there. That's not a healthy place to be. You need to continue, and you can't, if we're going to become like Jesus, we can't just be consumers of community. All of a sudden, we have to learn how to be able to create community. And make sure you pay attention to this. Community is not found, it is created. It is not found, it is created. And you need to learn how to be able to create community. One of the reasons why you love the community here at Hope and Grace is because there are others who said, you know what, I want to create community. And it starts with creating community for yourself, but then if we're going to really become like Jesus, if we're pursuing, okay, what does it look like to engage life the way that he engaged it? Then we begin to move to creating community for others, which, by the way, is awesome. One of my favorite things, with everything that we do, but especially with our bridge events, because you get to see it on a massive scale. If you weren't able to be part of one day yesterday, it was incredible. But my favorite part of the day was the very end of the day where everyone was on the roof. And I mean, everyone was on the roof. It was packed up there. I don't know what the capacity is, but I wasn't looking for the number because I didn't want to kick people out. And I was just, one of the things I love to do in those settings is I love to just kind of pull back into the corner and just look at the community that's taking place and all the different people who are connecting that would have never would have connected in any other way. And they're laughing together and they're sharing life together. I love to be able to pull back and watch that. And so many of you've been able to consume community here and you're experiencing it, you love it, but it's time for you to take that next step to really look at, okay, how do I become intentional about creating community for myself? And for many of you, you need to take that next step of saying, okay, how do I begin to create that community for others? It's incredible. And I want to celebrate many of you because many of you are actually doing that now. And on your teams and inside of your groups, you're working to create community for others and help them to be able to connect. It's been amazing to be able to see how our teams have grown over the course of this past year and all of our groups that just launched. But I want to stop here for just a second because I want to challenge you to really think through this. One, where are you at in that process? Where are you at in that process? And for you to really pray through, okay, God, where do you want to take me in this process? One of the things, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but one of the things that's happened here at Hope and Grace over the past couple of weeks is all of our women's groups are full. All of our women's dinner groups are full. Did you know that? Yeah. Well, it's kind of, I know, it's kind of weird though, right? Because part of you is like, wow, it's amazing. So many people got into groups. And the other part of you says, whoa, how do we help new people get into groups? And so I want to challenge you because I think for some of you, maybe God's been nudging you and saying, listen, I want for you to not just create community for yourself. I want for you to begin to create community for others. But you've been holding back. Maybe you're here today and that's your story. And it's difficult because you look at it and say, man, that's risky. I don't know how to lead a group. I've never led a group. It's risky. And you're right, it is risky. But here's the thing that Jesus taught us. It's worth the risk. So man, I'm gonna have to sacrifice my time. You look at yesterday and all the community that was experienced yesterday. It was amazing, but don't think it didn't come without a cost. There's a tremendous amount of work and effort that went into that. You say, well, it's gonna cost, and I'm gonna have to be consistent to group, and I don't know if I can do that. But you know what Jesus taught? It's worth it. It's worth it. Where are you at in that process? What's your next step? What's your next step? If you're here today and you feel like God's nudging you in that direction, I want to encourage you afterwards, just stop by one of our desks in the front and let them know. They'll get you connected to our team. They're working to be able to train and equip as many leaders as possible because of the fact that we always want to make sure that when someone steps into our family, that there's a place for them to belong. Always. But if that's going to happen, and not just in women's groups, for all of us, if that's going to happen, it's because we engage this process and we say, okay, now I want to learn how to be able to create community, and then I want to learn to help others create community as well, and we value it the way that he values it. Now, some of you are sitting here saying, well, what do you mean creating community? Are you just talking about starting groups? What are you talking about creating community? What does that look like? What does healthy community look like? And we've been talking about being known and this idea of being known, and some of you are saying, well, how do I be known? Are you just saying I join a group and then go into the group and share everything with the group? And sometimes that happens. The people will join a group and they'll go in and just basically throw up on the group, and then the group's like, what do we do now? I don't know. That's not what I'm talking about, and I just want to warn you against that. I'm not saying, listen, you should just be known by everybody. No, that's not what it looks like. But there are people in your life that should know you. And frequently here at Hope and Grace, we talk about this as healthy community or biblical community. There's a word that we use to describe it. Maybe you've heard us use it and you're saying, what are they talking about? Maybe someone's asked you a question as it pertains to this and you didn't understand, but you just kind of nodded and kept going with it. Because we use this word in the language that we've built around it is this idea of circles. So when we talk about healthy community here at Hoboken Grace, when we ask about community in one another's lives, we use this idea of circles because we believe that when you look at Paul's life, and as you watch the church developing, that there are circles of relationship that you need to develop in your life. Now, here's the thing. Joining a dinner group is not going to fill all of these circles. It's not going to. But you can't begin to build your circles if you're not engaging community. And so if you're not on a team, if you're not in a group, you're not going to connection events, it's going to be very difficult for you to be able to build this. And if you were to ask me, okay, Chris, what do your circles look like? I would talk to you about all sorts of groups that I've been in over the past 14 years. And I was a part of this dinner group, and I met so-and-so, and now they're a really close friend of mine, and I was part of this dinner group, and I got to know someone that I really seek out advice from time to time. All of that is developed as you're engaging community. And so one of the things that we ask for you to do and that we want to develop in your life is that you're a part of a team, you're a part of a group, and you're engaging connection events. You're engaging community. Why? So that you can build community. Well, how do you create community? What are those circles? I think that you see them best demonstrated in the life of Paul. They're also demonstrated in the life of Jesus, but he's God, so it's a little bit complicated. But when you look at Paul's life, there are these circles of relationship that he's very intentional with. The first one, and this is really interesting about Paul because Paul's a church planner. So, and for those of you who don't know, who's this Paul guy? Does he attend? No, Paul is an individual who actually wrote a lot of the New Testament. He planted churches all throughout the Roman Empire and really launched the church to what it is today. Well, in Paul's life, you see these circles of relationship. And one of the things that you see is Paul never goes anywhere alone. Very interesting. Even when it comes to church planning strategy, one of the things that I get to do from time to time is coach church planners. And I talk to them frequently about, listen, don't plan a church alone. Don't plan a church alone. Don't plan a church alone. And we've always talked about it from a strategy perspective. I think it's actually a theological perspective, that the reality that Paul never went anywhere alone. Why? Why did Paul never go anywhere alone? Because it's not good to be alone. I don't think it was just a strategy thing. It's not good to be alone. And so everywhere Paul goes, there's individuals who are with him. And there are very specific individuals who are with them. As he begins his journey, as a matter of fact, in this passage, it actually uses his previous name. His original name was Saul. It gets changed to Paul. But as he originally begins his journey and begins church planning, there's an individual named Barnabas who travels everywhere with him. Acts 12 says this, when Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission to Jerusalem, they returned, taking John Mark with them. John Mark is another individual who travels significantly with Paul. This is the individual that when you read through the story of Jesus's life called Mark, he's actually the one who wrote it. It's Peter's account that was written by John Mark. But everywhere Paul goes, again, at this time he's called Saul, but everywhere he goes, he travels with this individual, Barnabas. And one of the things that you need to develop in your life is those friends that you can trust. These are the people that you just engage life with. You're experiencing life with. You're experiencing all of what life brings and these different events in life with. Paul traveled everywhere with Barnabas, and you need those people. Now, when you join a group, is everyone in the group automatically going to be your best friend? No. There's going to be a couple people that you connect with in the group and a couple people that you don't. That's just life. There are wonderful people in this world that sometimes, have you ever had this experience where you meet someone and you know they're an incredible person and you're trying to connect with them, but you just don't? Like, why? Every conversation you have with them is awkward. And you don't even know why. Like, there was an individual, they actually have moved, but the individual used to live in Hoboken. I mean, he was an amazing guy, but it was always weird around him. I don't know why. Like, and I would do weird things. Like, One time he walked in, I was like, hey, Slick. I was like, I'd never say that to anyone. Why would that come out of my mouth? I don't even know. It's so awkward. But he's an incredible person. He just didn't connect. And there's going to be incredible people in your group that you just don't connect with. They're just not going to be that Barnabas. And then there's other people that you meet them and immediately it's like you've been best friends forever. And part of that, part of this too is trust. Again, when we talk about being known, I'm not saying just be known by anybody and everybody. And when we talk about, hey, listen, our trust isn't based on the fact that we can constantly trust the people around us, it doesn't mean that trustworthiness isn't important. Trustworthiness is important. And trust isn't something that should just be given. It's something that should be earned. And it's earned through demonstrated character. But as you're part of that group, you find those people that you connect with, and they have that, you see, no, they have character. I can trust them to be known by them. And I engage life together with them. You need these people. And this is one of those things in life that you're constantly, you have to not just develop, but you have to constantly maintain. And I've found myself, especially because we live in an area that's very transient, I found myself at times where I had a really great circle of friends, and then all of a sudden, a couple of years go by, and they're not here anymore. And I have to rebuild that. Some of you right now are in that rebuilding phase as it pertains to your circles. Which is why we encourage you, engage community. You can't build the circle if you're not engaging community. It's not good to be alone. And I'll say one other thing as it pertains to this. And I've never taught this before today. I don't know if I'll ever teach it again. But as we've been walking through this, I've become more and more convinced of this. Being a part of this community for 14 years now, I've become more and more convinced of this. Listen to me. And some of you aren't going to like it when I say this, but I say things that people don't like all the time. As a matter of fact, last week, apparently Anna was sitting in the back and I said something and she turned to the person next to her and says, people don't like him when he talks like that. So, but that's part of my job. That's what I do. So you might not like this, but listen to me. You should not, I don't believe that you should live alone. Don't live alone. Why? It's not good to be alone. Don't live alone. And I know we live in a very hyper-individualized culture, but I've become more and more convinced of this. You need to engage life with people. Paul didn't go anywhere alone. Don't live alone. Find someone to share life with. And I know people tell me, well, you know, I like living alone. I like my space. I'll live with someone when I get married. Can I share with you something? Let me tell you how that's going to go. It's going to be awful. You want to experience something really funny. Talk to two individuals who've lived alone for 5 years and then got married. And ask them how that first year went. It's not gonna go well. And more importantly, listen to me, it's not good to be alone. I've become convinced most of the really difficult counseling situations that I've engaged with people who are struggling with loneliness, they live alone. Don't live alone. Find a roommate. Find somebody that you engage life together with. Now, let me give this disclaimer because I know some of you are going to twist this. I know you are. And you're here and you're dating right now. And you're going to walk out of here and say, Chris told us to move in together. I know you're going to do it. I know you are. That is not what I'm telling you to do. I am not telling you to move into with someone that you have a romantic relationship with but are not completely committed to. That's not what I'm telling you to do, but what I am saying is this. God has stepped into our lives and said, you don't do good alone. you need to develop this circle. And for some of us, we need to let them into more of our lives than we currently are. And again, is it risky? Absolutely. Is it sacrifice? For sure. Does it take investment? Mm-hmm. Jesus said it's worth it. Jesus said it's worth it. You need to develop that circle. The next one is actually demonstrated, the next two circles are actually demonstrated in a relationship that Paul has with an individual named Timothy. You see very clearly their relationship as Paul's writing to Timothy. It starts off, the book of Timothy starts off, and Paul says this. It says, Timothy, my son. Now, is he actually his son? No, he's not actually his son. He says, here are my instructions for you. You see that they have a relationship in which Paul is mentoring Timothy. He's bringing him along, and he has very much that father-son type of relationship. And here you see the next two circles. One of those circles is the circle of mentors. In other words, you need someone who's a little bit further along than you that you're seeking advice from. I actually hesitate to use this word mentor because I think for many of us, we have a really bad idea of what a mentor is. I say mentor and you think savior. You think that there's someone who's going to be like the be-all, end-all in your life that's going to be able to shape you into who it is that you're becoming. That's Jesus, okay? And you should pursue that relationship with Jesus. As it pertains to the people around you, as you're engaging community, you need to look for those people who are just a little bit further along than you in all sorts of different areas. When I look at this circle in my life, I'm never looking for one person. I'm looking for four or five people. As a matter of fact, I just recently brought on a new mentor in my life. There's something that I want to be able to do that I don't know how to do that he's done. And so I just asked him, hey, listen, can we get together? I just want to ask you some questions about, I know that you've been able to do this. I want to be able to learn from you. And that's all a mentor is. It's just someone who's a little bit further ahead than you. And if you're here today and you say, well, I don't know if there's any really, I actually had someone come up to me once and say, you know, there's just really not anyone who could be a mentor for me inside of Hoboken Grace. And I said, well, you know, welcome to Hoboken Grace, Jesus. I didn't actually say that. I just thought that. If you're looking around and saying, I don't think there's really anybody who could be a mentor to me, you might be a little arrogant. And again, it's not someone who has everything together in life. It's just someone who's a little bit further along than you in a certain area of life. So I have individuals who are mentors for me as it pertains to how to be able to run a church and how to be able to be a pastor. That mentor is not the same mentor for me as it is as it pertains to my personal relationship with Jesus. And then as well as that, there's other individuals in my life that I go to when as it pertains to marriage. There's all these different people. And none of them, by the way, don't go and ask them to be your mentor. I didn't go to any of them and be like, hey, could you be my mentor? They would have said no, because it's terrifying. You're gonna freak people out. But if you just go to them, and here again, this takes investment. And one of the things that's very difficult for me is that this is the easiest circle for me to just neglect. Because they don't need anything from you. And it's really easy for me to go months and have not talked to that person, not reached out to that person, not made time for that person. Because there's all sorts of other things in my life that are demanding my attention. But it takes time. Is it risky if you ask them, hey, listen, can we sit down? And you're asking them questions. Yeah, absolutely. And you need to invest in it. Sometimes people will say, you know, I'm trying this, but I can't really get anyone to say yes. And I say, well, what are you investing in it? I say, what do you mean? When we first started Hoboken Grace, I wanted to be able to learn from other pastors, and there were several church planters in the city that had been very successful. And so I called each one of them and said, hey, what's your favorite restaurant? Can I buy you lunch next week and ask you three questions? Every single one of them said yes. Because they all wanted to eat at their favorite restaurant. They did not want to meet with me. But I invested in it, and I invested in them. Is it going to take investment? Absolutely. Jesus said, it's worth it. But not only do you need individuals that you're learning from, you also need individuals that you're building into. You need Timothys. Someone that you're taking what God has given you and you're giving it to someone else. And you're helping them take steps, just like someone else helped you take steps. And to be able to jump on a team and find someone else on the team that you can bring along. Or maybe you're engaging community and you're part of a group and you're gonna find someone else that you're gonna bring into that group with you. You need those individuals that you're speaking into. And some of you say, what do I have to offer? I had this conversation with our staff just a couple weeks ago. And I told them, I said, listen, I'm not saying that you have all of this to offer and that you're gonna be this incredible guide for the world around you. What I'm saying is this, there's something that you excel in. And there's, for almost all of us, there's something that you excel in that you can build into someone else, that you can hand off to someone else. And maybe you decided to get involved in our middle school program here at Hoboken Grace and say, listen, I just want to be able to help those kids the way that someone helped you when you were at that age. The other night we had like 55 kids. It was crazy. I was like, this could go bad. Why did we start a youth group? That's literally what I thought as I arrived. I was like, this could go really bad because it's crazy. But what we get to do in those kids' lives, many of you experienced it when you were their age. And it saved you from so much pain because someone showed up to just take what they'd been given and what had been built into them and to give it to you. You need those Timothys. Who are you investing in? And then finally, you need what I call Felixes. Now, I know when I say Felix, all of you think cat, right? But Felix is actually a biblical name. Some of you are like, you're making this up. This is not real. No, actually, Paul, one of the individuals that we see Paul working to share the message of Jesus with is this individual named Felix. And the other circle that you need to develop in your life is that you need relationships with people who don't know Christ. Frequently, people will say to me, you know, I'm going to join my second dinner group. I think I'm going to get into three groups. We don't let people be a part of multiple groups here at Hoboken Grace. And they'll say, why can't I be a part of multiple groups? There's a couple different reasons why, but one of the biggest reasons why is because I don't want all of your friends to be believers. And you cannot possibly carry out the mission of Jesus if you don't know and don't have relationships with people who don't know Jesus. Because Jesus said, no, guys, you're not going to stay together. You're going to go. His instruction, his command to us is go. And so we ask people, don't be on multiple teams. Don't be in multiple groups. Why? Because you need to develop relationships outside of this community. And if we're going to bring what Jesus has given us in this community to those outside of this community, we need to build those relationships and be intentional about that circle. Is it risky? Absolutely risky. Does it mean that you're going to have to sacrifice and you're going to have to work to be able to build those new relationships? Absolutely. But guess what? Jesus said it's worth it. It's worth it. Jesus went to that cross, gave his life. Change everything for us as it pertains to loneliness. To bring us into that family. And to make sure that we knew, no, you'll never be alone again. He's taught us what a healthy community looks like. We have to decide, no, I want to be like him. I want to value it the way he valued it. I don't want to just create this for myself. I want to create this for those around me. And I want to bring it to the world around me. What an incredible opportunity. It's worth it. It's worth it. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that today, not only would we recognize the circles that maybe we need to work on. Not only would we recognize maybe where we are in terms of consuming community or creating community for those around us, I pray that we will be overwhelmed by how far you went, overwhelmed by this reality that we heard sung about earlier, this reality. That you were willing to send out the army. That you fought to the darkest night to rescue us. To rescue us from what you described as death. From what had separated us from you. And what was destroying our relationships with each other. Father, I pray not only that we would experience community ourselves, I pray that we would powerfully bring this to those around us. In Jesus' name.